Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Members of the Florida House debated a bill late into the evening last night aimed at implementing the constitutional amendment approved by Florida voters last year to automatically restore the voting rights of former felons who've served their sentences. A Senate version of the bill passed its final committee Tuesday as well and now heads to the floor in that chamber. Last fall, Florida voters approved Constitutional Amendment 4 to restore voting rights to up to 1.5 million former felons. At the time, supporters celebrated what was to be the largest expansion of voting eligibility in the country since the elimination of Jim Crow-era poll taxes and literacy tests. The amendment restores voting rights to ex-felons, otherwise known as returning citizens, who have completed all the terms of their sentence, with the exception of those convicted of murder or a felony sex offense. Those who penned the amendment language say the measure was intended to be self-executing and to get legislators out of the business of deciding who gets to vote and who doesn't. However, Republican lawmakers in the House and Senate continue advancing these bills, intended to implement and further interpret Amendment 4 in ways that could place some restrictions on which former felons will be eligible to have their voting rights restored. Those restrictions include a requirement that all fines and fees associated with a felony sentencing be paid before the former felon could regain the right to vote. And that's sparking debate over whether the proposal undermines the intent of Florida voters when nearly 65% of them voted in favor of Amendment 4. With less than 2 weeks before the end of the annual legislative session, the bill seems likely to pass. Neil Voles is back on the show today for a closer look. He's political director of the bipartisan Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which was the driving force behind getting Amendment 4 on the ballot. Neil, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. Always great to connect with you.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate the time.
And if you'd like to add your voice to the discussion, phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So to start off, Neil, let's just get a status update on how the legislation is progressing. Lots of debate on the House floor last night. Do you anticipate this coming up for a vote in the House sometime today?
Absolutely. Yeah, a bunch of us, what we call returning citizens, people with past felony convictions, are up here in Tallahassee engaging in the political process. And this bill is actually expected to be on the floor very soon.
All right. And what about in the Senate? Just finished the committee process yesterday as well. As far as I know, it hasn't yet been scheduled for floor debate and vote, but I imagine that'll be happening in the coming days.
That's right. The clock is ticking on the session, and so that will be scheduled very soon. And you're right. There was a Senate committee chaired by Senator Beniquisto from Fort Myers that actually helped us move the ball forward quite a bit. We've been in a process where we were really fighting any need for legislation, and ultimately, like you had mentioned to your listeners, you begin to see that, well, there is going to be a bill coming, it looks like, so we need to engage the process. And for the first time, we were able to stand up in support of some of the actions that were being taken. We're not there yet, but we're beginning to see a glimmer of hope that we might be able to find something that the returning citizen community could support.
So what sorts of potential provisions are we talking about here?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
What sort of potential provisions are you talking about here that the coalition might be able to get behind?
So our main concern and what we're spending most of our time on involves the definition of completion of sentence. And we believe that the standard for completion of sentence that's been used for the last couple decades by the state of Florida is our guidepost. And that basically says that once you've completed incarceration, once you've completed probation, and completed your court-ordered restitution, that then you're eligible to vote. That does not include court costs and administrative fees and things that are not geared towards the sentence as much as towards supporting the system. And so we've seen the Senate in the last couple weeks take step by step by step to get closer to that vision. And we're just about there. We're hopeful that we can get there. And so that is a place in which we begin to start to feel like this can implement the spirit of Amendment 4 in a healthy way.
Oh, okay. Okay, interesting. So I thought this was more or less a done deal, but glad to see even in sort of the final hours here, there's some discussion going on. And I wanted to deviate this specific conversation about the bill for just a moment, because I saw on Facebook yesterday that the coalition's executive director, Desmond Mead, and director of strategic partnerships, Sheena Mead, met with White House advisor Jared Kushner yesterday to discuss second chances and criminal justice reform. How did that meeting go?
You know, that meeting went really well. Jared Kushner is a policy advisor for the White House. He's the son-in-law of President Trump. And he is actually very interested in criminal justice issues, helped pass the First Step Act at the federal level, which provided some sentencing reform and transition reform for people who are coming out of incarceration. And so it was a really good conversation. Now, one of the things that was discussed was how important it is, and for this issue in particular, to remain as bipartisan as possible. We live in a very partisan time period, and some of those come about from just kind of real differences. But as it relates to this moment in time and discussions around criminal justice reform, this is a space where you find people on the right and the left, in the center, non-affiliated, who can come together and really work together. And we're seeing some transformational things happen in states all across the country, including passage of Amendment 4. So I know there was a discussion about how do we make sure that we keep moving forward in a way that emphasizes our unity as opposed to focuses on our differences.
Right. And this is an issue we have discussed in past conversations, just related to the idea of what might motivate a lawmaker to support or not support this movement, sort of based on the idea that a returning citizen, someone with a past felony conviction, as though that's some sort of indicator as to how they might vote or think politically, as though it's just like one big homogenous voting bloc, and that's just not the case.
No, that's right. There's really two big points whenever I hear that argument brought up is, one, the returning citizen community in Florida is diverse. There is no, you know, kind of lean that people have been studying this see. You know, we are in all communities. We are representative of all kinds of different backgrounds and political beliefs and races and socioeconomic backgrounds. And then the second point, which I know you also agree, is that ultimately it's about supporting democracy. And when you're fighting for democracy, you're fighting for that person who might even be voting against you simply because it's the right thing to do.
Right, right. Well, can we get maybe a little bit into the nuts and bolts about what the Senate, at least in the Rules Committee, may be considering as far as deviations from the House version of the bill when it comes to requiring restitution of fees? I mean, because I know this isn't
sure.
Set in stone yet, but what specifically would the Senate bill be looking to, I guess, relinquish that the House bill still holds on to?
Well, the difference right now between the House and the Senate bill, and you're right, this is such a fluid situation. It could, even in 48 hours or 72 hours, look a little bit differently.
Right.
But where we sit right now is the House bill mandates that people pay court costs, fines, fees, in some cases things that are not associated with the sentence as we see it. And in contrast, the Senate bill says that your fines, your court costs, those things, when they become a part of a civil judgment, meaning they get out of the criminal process, that actually is the trigger then for somebody to be able to register to vote. As it relates to restitution, that is an issue where if you look at the current process, in the clemency process, that is one where you need to dig a little bit deeper. So the restitution is something that we campaigned on, those of us who were supporting Amendment 4, because restitution is a part of the restorative process, right? So there needs to be that healing that's associated with the harm that was brought to somebody. And so what's going on right now is that the Senate is trying to create a process that allows someone who owes restitution in certain circumstances to go to the judge. And the judge can decide to bring that into the civil proceeding, into more of a debt collection process, as opposed to keep it in the criminal process. And at that moment, some people would be able to register to vote. Right now, the House does not have a mechanism like that that is set up in the way that the Senate does. And so that is also a difference between the bills.
Okay, interesting. I think that was an interesting point there, the idea that sometimes, a fee that someone would have to pay can be converted into a civil lien, and that really just takes it out of the criminal court system entirely.
Well, yes, and especially when you start to, and one of the things that I love about this process, and I love about your show because we actually get a chance to talk in depth, is people who have walked through this process are able to talk into it and be helpful. What we've seen is we have 6 committee meetings, and the last 3 have all been the committee's move towards the returning citizen community. Because when you allow people to sit down and talk about their life experiences, when you write a piece of legislation, and then you hear that, the way it's written means that when my debt collector charges me 13% interest for the 4 years, and I have an $8 an hour job, you're now telling me I have to pay the interest, or you're telling me I have to pay the fine or the fee that was associated with my probation but not with my sentence, you start to see a real dialogue take place.
Right.
And so it's actually, while we're not there yet and we might end up not getting there, I am, as somebody who was recently allowed to get back into the political process, I do appreciate our system and our local representatives who are willing to listen and have these conversations and try to come to a place where we can really make some good things happen.
All right, and a final question for you, Neil. I know we hear a lot of media outlets, I do this too, just for the sake of clarity and brevity, talking about this issue, use terms like former felon or ex-felon. You prefer the term returning citizen. It might just sound like semantics to some, but tell me why that characterization is important, just in regards to helping people reintegrate into society and reducing recidivism.
I think there's the idea of what recidivism and its impact on our communities, like you had mentioned. I also think it's a humanizing term. Sometimes many of us get labels, that we don't necessarily like. And returning citizen implies a humanity behind it and movement, that we are not the person we used to be and that we are returning to our communities, and that is something to celebrate, and that we are citizens of Florida and not simply, the worst thing we've ever done. And so words definitely help create a culture around a movement, and we've seen that returning citizen, that the term has really been helpful to humanize the stories of people like myself who have passed felony convictions and how we interact with our community.
Well said. And with just a few days left of the session and this issue still very much in unknown territory, I'm sure we'll be speaking again. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks, John. I appreciate it, man.
Neil Voles is political director of the bipartisan Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Also want to say thanks to our earlier guests, FGCU professor of neuroscience and psychology, Dr. Martha Rosenthal, and Cole Peacock, one of the founders of Seed and Bean in downtown Fort Myers. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by myself and my co-host Mike Canary. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.